This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Talk money to me.
Hello and welcome to Talk Money to Me. Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. I'm Candace Burke.
And I'm Felicity Thomas. Today, we're so excited to have on the show the managing director of a company that we've been following closely for years now. I'll give you a few clues. The company was established in 2015. It actually listed on the ASX in 2016. It's in child safety and had a rebrand in 2023. Can you guess who it is?
Well, in case you did, well done. We are so happy to be sitting down today with Tim Levy on our show, who is the founder and managing director of Qoria, formerly known, as Felicity mentioned, back before 2023 as Family Zone Cybersecurity. The stock today is on the ASX, and the code being QOR, which is a global technology company dedicated to keeping children safe and well in their digital lives. Now, you're going to be hearing more from Tim directly about how he built the business, but one quick stat, which I really love, that highlights, in my opinion, the power of Qoria's technology today is that it's keeping 23 million children safe across 27,000 schools at the moment, which is in three continents, all using the web. I just think that's massive. Now, before we bring you our conversation today with Tim, please remember this chat today is not considered personal advice, even though we are registered financial advisors at Shaw & Partners. We also discuss a few child security measures. So if anything of this content is harmful to you, please go out and seek your professional support networks as well, which we can pop in the show notes. Everything we're chatting about the business is known at the Facts Known at Retirement Recording, which is the 23rd of April, 2024. Alrighty, disclaimer done. Let's bring you straight into our conversation with Tim.
Welcome, Tim, to Talk Money to Me. We're so excited to have you on the show today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, we want to start off our conversation, Tim, by really turning back the clock. I know your story well and have been speaking about the company since this podcast actually started back in 2020. So we've been long-term investors about 4 years so far. However, it would be great for our audience really to hear how and why Family Zone was born back in 2015.
Right, thank you. Yeah, it's a bit of a cliche, but it started because myself and a couple of buddies had kids, and we became acutely aware of the challenges of online safety. My niece's best friend actually killed himself at the time, which was a horrible story, and there was a bit of cyberbullying related to it all, and that kind of got me thinking about what's underneath the surface online that you don't get to see as a parent. And it became apparent to me that it's hidden from you. You know, a couple of years later, my son and I were driving around Subiaco here in Perth, and he was addicted to this Katy Perry video called California Girls. I'm not sure if you remember it. And he was listening to it constantly. And I won't go into the conversation we had, but then eventually I looked at the iPad to see why he liked that video so much. And it's really sexualized video. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so what? But there was the feed of recommended videos next to that video that could have taken him down and may have, in fact, taken him down some very dark paths. And that worried me because I thought YouTube was a fairly benign platform. And from that moment on, I've really dedicated my life to trying to solve this problem in a universal way. I went and spoke to the police, to Microsoft, to various school events. I ended up camping in Virginia for a period of time trying to build a prototype of this platform. Ultimately, what we're trying to do, if I can fast forward to where this conversation is probably going to go, come up with a platform that allowed all of the actors in a child's digital life to do their job, teach, lead, create boundaries, protect, and so on. And that's what we've been doing ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important. I mean, it seems like it's getting scarier and scarier for a parent. You know, I grew up without all of this, so our parents didn't have to worry so much, but it scares the hell out of me, the access that, you know, the kids have these days.
Yes, that's true. And you're right to be scared about those. We call them toxicities in our industry, like they're, you know, a bad actor, a pedophile, or your child watching a hardcore porn video or being bullied. And that does happen. And that's something that we as a group are dedicated to helping reduce. The thing that bothers me, though, is the normalization. Like, it is now normal for a kid at 8. Would you believe that the average Australian girl watches her first porn video when she's 8?
What?
Because they search for pussies online. They're into cats.
Oh.
So girls see porn before boys. Now it becomes normal, and boys are gambling is now normal. My boys are in a school here in Perth, and they're all gambling or trying to gamble in their mid-teens.
Wow.
You know, sexualization of children way earlier than it would have been for us. I remember, you know, when I was a kid, there was always that bad egg, you know, that one kid who smoked at the back of the school.
Mm.
But it's not one bad egg now. It's the majority of kids being exposed to these things. So by the age of 15, 16, every kid's watched porn. Every kid's been involved in gambling. Every kid's been bullied. Every kid's got some sort of compulsive activity around social media or gaming. Like, this is now the normal. And this is what ultimately our business is trying to fix, is to bring back that innocence of childhood.
Yeah, and it's, as you said, it's very confronting to hear that, and it's becoming an addiction as well. So, you know, with the evolution of technology and now the adoption of AI really taking out warp speed for nearly every tech platform out there, can you share with us your long-term vision for the business? Because as you said, you started out to solve a problem for you and your mates and your kids and that horrible story with your mate's niece. But how has it progressed over the last 9 years? And I guess, where do you see the tech moving as technology advances in the next sort of 5 to 10 years for your business?
That's a lot of questions in one. Let me try and answer.
Sorry.
So in 5 years, like, the vision of this company is really has always been about influence. You know, obviously we're trying to build a technology that helps real world problems, and we're making it better. We literally intervene in a life-threatening situation every hour in our business. It's quite confronting.
Wow.
But ultimately, the safety tech industry needs a voice when it comes to these serious challenges. You've got big tech, you know, Meta, Facebook, Google, and so on, that are really protecting their own interests. Their community guidelines are always subject to their commercial interests. And they're, in without question, in fact, they're undermining parents and exposing kids to these dangers. That is sadly their business model. And I feel like the regulators globally, the kind of e-safety, online safety-focused regulators, feel that they can negotiate with big tech and deal with this problem, and that's just not going to work. These issues are metastasizing. They're only getting worse. And AI is accelerating the risks to children.
Mm.
And so going back to our strategy of growth, we've grown from, you know, I think in 2018 we were $4 million of revenue. Today we're $112 million of revenue, because we believe that our industry needs a voice when it comes to issues of public policy and dealing with school systems and, you know, maybe muscling up against big tech, so that, you know, parents have a fighting chance of creating boundaries and protecting their kids. So our ambitions are about scale, and you'll see us without question combining with others in the coming years as we pursue, you know, that leverage. For now, obviously you've got investors listening to this call, my focus is entirely about, you know, transitioning to profit. We've been focused on that for the last few years. We need to be able to prove to the market that we can stand on our own 2 feet. And we're essentially there now. Like, we're kind of cash generating. We'll be profitable on a monthly basis within the next couple of months. So I get to now lift my vision into this kind of broader vision for the company, which is really a 25 story. In terms of technology, it's changing so quickly. My Lord, it's AI wasn't even contemplated when we started this business in 2015. There's a constant cat and mouse game with big tech, who do things, you know, under the guise of often privacy or security, and essentially make it very difficult for us to do our job. Apple in particular do that frequently, where they change protocols or change methods of interacting with their operating system. You know, even in fact, Google did it in the last couple of weeks. They changed their search algorithms So if you search for parental controls, the only parental controls you get on Google's first page are provided by Google and Apple. I mean, that's disgusting. Who do they think they are that they can unilaterally make these calls and undermine good organizations and parents just trying to do the right thing by the kids? And so that's endemic in this industry. So it's at all levels, technology changes to make our lives challenging. And then the AI phenomenon, the thing that worries me is you've now got automatrons, you've now got algorithms that are very good at understanding what people's proclivities and young people's proclivities in particular. It can take them down paths where any human intervention, who knows where that's going to go. That really does concern me.
Yeah, absolutely. And the algorithms on things like, I guess, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok are crazy. I do feel like your phone is really listening to you these days as well. And then you get nonstop of whatever it is that you've maybe searched or come across. Now, we know you're really making some headlines, I think, at the moment in the tech space. There's a lot of larger players swarming you at the moment. You even had a takeover bid recently that the board unanimously declined. I'm very happy about that. So looking forward, what are the key strategic initiatives you're currently pursuing and how do they really align with the company's overall goals?
Our point of difference now, strategic focus, is really on this platform approach to online safety. Okay, it sounds like a cliche, but none of our competitors, bizarrely, are focused on the child. I know it sounds really weird, but we truly are. What we're trying to do is have a platform that allows a parent to exercise their rights as a parent, or to be a good parent or a bad parent, right? But allows them to do what they want to do, monitor their child, not monitor the child, control their sleep time, limit social media during study time, whatever. And then that, as that child transitions during the day to a school administrator who has an obligation to stop them watching pornography, or a teacher in a modern classroom who's staring at the back of 40 screens and needs to be able to open up and close down the internet and manage distractions, we want all those people to be able to do their job. And we're pretty good at that. We've probably got the best technology in the world to do that. The next strategic imperative for us is then to layer on top of that support for safeguarding, or you'd call it pastoral care in Australia. So those people that are concerned with the well-being of the child, because well-being has a very direct impact to educational outcomes. You know, a kid that feels safe, healthy, supported, without question, all the stats show that they deliver better outcomes for themselves and for the school community. So it's an investment in that is the next stage for us, and doing that in a very unified way. We're trying to create a seamless and beautiful experience for all those people. Then getting beyond the platform into how we sell, it's really English-speaking markets. We're quite dominant in the UK. We're dominating in the US. We want to build out that position in those markets. That's really next 12 to 18 months for us. The next step for us beyond that is non-English-speaking markets, who, of course, have the same sorts of challenges, often less affluent school systems, though, and so we need to modify our approach, our go-to-market, to deal with that, but we've got clear plans for that. And, of course, whilst doing all of that, I need to now start lifting my head out of the business and doing a lot more in publicity and government relations and being much more of a voice and an influencer for parents, because parents are just not represented in this space at all. Yeah, that's really the kind of key things that we're doing in the next 3 years.
And as you say, and you touched on earlier, the big tech players are sort of undermining parents. And as you said, you need to be that advocate for children's safety on behalf of parents. So are there any other challenges facing the industry, you know, that you're foreseeing with all those strategic kind of high-level goals that you've just gone through?
I think the dominance of big tech, it's described in competition policy as the gatekeeper role. I think that is, without question, the biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. Julie Malgrant, eSafety Commissioner, is really passionate about this concept of safety by design, which sounds great, you know, essentially putting the onus on application developers and, you know, gaming developers and so on to consider child safety and the maturity appropriateness of their services as they're building them. I mean, it sounds like a great concept. But if you can't identify the age of a user, you know, how are you going to apply safety by design?
Yeah.
You know, it breaks down because parents don't have the ability to easily, through the services provided by Google, Apple and Microsoft, to ensure that a child is using an application that has the types of controls that Julie would like the kids to be imposed on the child, if that makes sense. So there's a breakdown in this, you know, great ideas of the safety regulators and the practicalities of technology, and that breakdown is because, in particular, Google, Apple, and Microsoft get in the way of it. It's not in their interest to make it easy for parents to moderate behavior. Of course, it's not. Right? They're about engagement.
They want more
which
eyeballs.
Is also known as addiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I've got no doubt that that is the biggest challenge in our industry. Absolutely no doubt. Now, fortunately, though, we've got organisations like the Australian Consumer Competition Commission, Competition Market Authority in the UK, and a whole range of senators in the US that are advocating for interoperability to break these monopolies. So there is competition policy coming. The ACCC, in fact, have got probably the strongest policy recommendations, let's call them, around interoperability and doing things like limiting the ability of operating systems to preference what's called first-party apps. If that happens, then I feel like the whole world changes for and not only for kids, but even for adults who are dealing with similar challenges around addictive behaviours and you know, screen times. We've got a business that we just announced this week that we've sold, a beautiful business called McGeary. It's built to handle addiction to porn by adults. That business is doubling every 6 months. This is a serious challenge, and it's not just in pornography, but all gaming disorders and, you know, real-world issues as well. These challenges are everywhere, and the safety and well-being, the kind of screen time management industry, are really suffer under the gatekeeping restrictions.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And one just kind of quick thought is, how do you deal with children essentially going behind their parents' back and lying to still get access to these harmful sites and apps, you know, changing their date of birth, for example, to create a profile?
Yeah, it's a big problem. So, I mean, our technology today, by and large, is a block and allow. So, you know, inside our business, we have a whole range of educators and child psychologists and child development experts who make recommendations. And they'll say, for instance, don't let your kid use Instagram until they're 15 or 16. Parents can, you know, choose to do that or not. And so our technology is pretty good, actually, at blocking access to Instagram. If you're a parent, you've decided that you don't want them to have it. Mm-hmm. But the point you're making is, once you've put them in Instagram, how do you know that you know, they're using the parental control settings, the privacy settings that are available on Instagram? How do you know that they're not creating false accounts and bullying other kids?
Correct.
That's really difficult to do.
Yeah.
And again, that's one of my frustrations is Apple and Google and Microsoft, to a lesser extent, make it very difficult for the parental control apps to interact with the platforms, the online platforms, to enforce parents' choices in there. We've actually done some work with TikTok or ByteDance and some work with Meta, where we've been talking about the technology that could make that happen. But again, the operating systems are making that really challenging for us. But that's what a parent wants. A parent wants to say, well, you know, my child's 12. Give them a 12-year-old experience everywhere.
Exactly.
Apps they can use, and when they're in a social media, make sure it's a 12-year-old experience for that child. Don't force me to go into every single device and every single app and onto their game controller and configure all of this stuff. That's impossible for a parent. They're just not full-time IT administrators, and the stuff is too confusing. That's what I believe the eSafety Commissioner should be advocating for, simplicity, not complexity.
Absolutely. Or even, you don't really even have to validate your age and your identity. Perhaps actually having to validate who you are before having an Instagram account or a Facebook account, that actually prevent anyone really under the age of 18 having that, which I think personally would be a good thing, because it would prevent more of the bullying that happens, especially in those high school years as well. You know, not growing up with that was a blessing, really. And I think that kids these days are a lot older than what, you know, we were at that age. I think, you know, 13-year-olds are looking like 25-year-olds rather than, you know, 13-year-olds. So it's a sad and scary world. So I love what you're doing. And I love that it's really a platform or ecosystem created by parents for parents, you know, really addressing all of these concerns.
Yeah, thank you. No, I agree. One of the things that we talk about constantly in our business is our job is to protect the child, not children, if that makes sense. But you can get very caught up in big data, but companies like us always do, right? And you draw inferences of the activity of huge populations of kids. Like, we look after 23 million children, right? So the data we have access to is extraordinary. And that's interesting, But what takes primacy for us is that child in that moment and who needs to help them when something bad's happening. So that's something we speak about constantly. And I need to constantly remind everyone in our business that our job is to protect a child in that moment and to empower all the actors that are there to protect them.
Yeah, and a unique business model that you have built over the years, Tim, is, as you said, you're protecting 23 million children across 27,000 schools so far in three continents. So in a moment, we're going to actually dive deep into your company financials, as well as discuss with you how Courier is ahead of its competition. We're going to go further down that thought process. But first, before we do all of that, we're just going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. So on Talk Money to Me, we love talking money. So let's focus on your financials. You did actually mention a couple of them previously. Tim, you're really delivering on all key fronts at the moment, it seems, especially in this recent March quarter. You mentioned it before, but I just want to highlight a few points. So your growth in contracted annual recurring revenue is now 112 million. Service margins actually passed through 90%, and your fixed cash costs continue to fall down to the equivalent of 78 million per annum in the quarter. These results really are providing confidence that Courier will be cash flow positive for the calendar year 2024 and EBITDA positive for FY25. So can you discuss with us, you know, your recent financial performance over the past year? I mean, how did you really get to these figures, and what are the key factors that are really driving that performance?
Yeah, so look, we've acquired a number of groups. Actually, I shouldn't say acquired. We try not to use that term internally because of the cultural implications. We've merged with another number of groups in the last few years, and that's hard. You have to have a strong emphasis on cultural alignment before you can do the hard work of structural reorganization and kind of technical integration, which is now what's happening in our business, and we're starting to see the fruits of that effort in our cost structure. So I think our fixed cash cost structure got well into the mid-80s and it's now into the high 70s. And I'm ambitious. I think we'll get into the mid-70s in the next 12 to 18 months. Or at the very least, I'll now be able to kind of cap our fixed costs at around about that level. And as you mentioned, at a 92% service margin, or every dollar of additional incremental sales in our business, 92 cents drops to the bottom line. It's incredible leverage in a business like ours. The best way to think about a business like ours is like a telco. If you're going to have a fixed cost, you've got a high service margin, every incremental dollar makes you extremely profitable. So that's the plan. And we've got a big chunk of efficiency still to come as we further unify our platform and our business. It's probably in the order of $4 to $6 million that we'll be able to redeploy more efficiently across the business into, you know, maybe new feature sets or, you know, new go-to-market strategies or whatever. So I'm feeling really confident in our cost structure. Let's say it's $80 million of cost. I know that sounds like a lot. It is. It's frightening. But that's kind of the scale of our business. At $112 million of ARR, you know, adding $6 million of contracted revenue last quarter was just so extraordinary and so reliable is our growth. We are very comfortably growing at 20 to 25% year on year. On a $100 million base, that's pretty impressive. I won't give you a forecast, but you wait for our June results. They're gonna startle you. Like, we're really excited. In fact, coming into this quarter, we had a pipeline of about $28 million of deals, which, you know, underlines our confidence around the projections that the guidance we've been giving about being cash flow positive this calendar year and EBITDA positive for the next financial year. That's really how I think about my business. It's really that simple. It's, you know, keep that fixed cost flat, right? It's keep pouring effort into product development, you know, as efficiently as we can within that cost structure. Our sales teams are the leading sales teams in edutech in the world without question in the English-speaking markets. And they will be growing our business at 20 to 25% year on year. And if you put that into a spreadsheet, it becomes really compelling really quickly.
Oh, we love a good spreadsheet. Definitely do. So on that, you've obviously got great salespeople on the ground in the countries and continents that you're operating in. Let's just focus on the US, because I remember one time you mentioned that the summer period in the US is one of your biggest sales period. And you just touched on 28 million in the pipeline, which is fantastic to hear. So who are your biggest competitors, would you say, in your space in the US market?
Yeah, they're names that most would not have heard of. We call them specialty safety providers. The biggest names are Go Guardian, Lightspeed Systems, not the point of sale provider. It's a different company. Securely, Content Keeper, Impero, Aristotle, Bloxy, Gaggle. Like, again, names you've never would have heard of.
Are these listed or private?
No, they're all private, all owned by private equity groups. Yeah. There is still a chunk of our industry that's supported by the internet security players. Think, you know, Cisco and Zscaler and Palo Alto and so on. But those school districts and in the UK MATs that are a bit more interested in supporting pastoral care and delivering a managed experience in a classroom, the firewall type players can't do that anymore. So that's really the role of people like us and Lightspeed and GoGuardian. As big and important as the challenges are that we deal with, the total addressable market in the US for let's call it safety and wellbeing tech in K-12, it's maybe $1 billion US. It's less than 0.25% of schools' budgets are put in these really important matters. And this is something I've been thinking about a lot in the last year, is our industry is not doing a great job of proving its relevance to the outcomes of the institution. We're selling too much to the IT person. And I think that's something that we need to change. Much like ERP vendors concentrate now on selling to the CEO, I think that's what Safety Suite needs to do. We need to start selling to the superintendent, not the IT person.
Yeah, absolutely. It just kind of is mind-blowing that it's only $1 billion, seen as it's such a huge problem. And, you know, particularly in the US, because of their gun laws and all of the shootings that occur at their schools. I mean, that's just something that kind of pops up to my mind. If they had better security, they would, you know, wouldn't have this bullying that generally pushes these kids to do this. Because we all know that, you know, children don't have mature minds and are very impressionable and always succumb to, I guess, bullying in this way. So it seems to be even more important in the US than other countries. Also, I think what's another really interesting point here is you've really, really honed in on the UK. So in your recent update, you know, you said you've kind of done a lot in the UK already, focusing on the US, which I find really important. Is there any other major projects or catalysts that you're launching that we can discuss that investors should be aware of? I mean, where next?
The way to think about our business, I think, is layers. Like the entry point of the first layer is providing filtering, which is delivering on the duty of care obligation of a school. And we're quite dominant in the UK, you know, 40% of the market. In the US, I think we've got 12 or 13% of students. We think we'll be in the kind of 20% range of students being filtered by our technology in the next year. The next layer is supporting teaching, and that's classroom management tools. Most of our clients are now buying that service off us. There's still a lot of white space in the market. The next layer of innovation in our industry is safeguarding. That's dealing with real-time incidents, kids being bullied, threats of gun violence, threats of kids being radicalized in the UK is a big concern. That's quite a nascent industry. There's probably less than 30% of schools in the English-speaking markets are using that sort of technology. We have the best technology in the world in that space. And so a big chunk of our focus at the moment is just bringing that to the attention of schools and rolling that out. And in particular, the UK, that's now essentially mandated by law. So you'll see unbelievable growth in safeguarding technology for us in the UK. So for us, it's not about land grab anymore. It's about layering these services for existing customers. The next suite of tools we started to roll out are about engaging the child in their online safety journey. If you think about everything I've just said, it's being imposed on the child. So we don't want everything to be done to them. We want them to have a role in this. And so our Pulse technology is about allowing children to check in, to be surveyed, to basically have an input into the programs that a school might run to support their individual or collective well-being. It's really, really amazing stuff, pretty engaging. But again, it's quite nascent. It's very early days. That technology for us is maybe $3 or $4 million of recurring revenue. And for some schools, because it talks to what teaching, it talks to how teachers think. And so schools are finding it pretty intoxicating, but they don't have established budgets for it. So now we're working with these schools to see if we can find the budgets and get the testimonials, you know, deliver the evidence that these are good investments. Massive opportunity in my view there, because these are premium products. When you're talking the language of a school, not the educators, not the IT person, mm-hmm. you can charge a premium. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the big part of our upside just within our existing markets. The other thing that's unique about our business, sorry, I could talk about this for hours, is we call it education engagement. It's then delivering through our platforms the insights and the advice that the individual needs to make the right decision at that time. So I'll give an example. If your child's bullied, most likely the first thing you'll do is to rip the device off your child, mm-hmm. right? And that's the worst thing you can do. Most child psychologists, depending on the severity of the issue, will tell you that, well, that's going to break trust. They're going to lie to you in the future. And that's just one, you know, big example of our instincts as adults, you know, non-digital natives, are often wrong about how to deal with these situations. But it's the same in the classroom. It's the same in pastoral care. So what we're trying to now do is layer content services, some paid and some free, across our platform to make sure that everyone is empowered to make the choices that are right for them at that time. I think that, again, is going to be a lucrative business for us. We do compete with some paid content providers out there, like Common Sense Media is a big one in the US. So I think that's a legitimate business that's coming for us, but we're investing freemium at the moment. And then, of course, it's non-English speaking markets is the next biggest opportunity. And we've got a fantastic group based in Barcelona that are in building up capability. How does Western Europe think about these challenges? They've gone from a standing start to around about $500,000 of recurring revenue. Great group of people, really passionate. Okay, just piloting all of that at the moment. And for me, that's a kind of back end of 25 story.
And I think that's a really smart way to think of it, because the free model, as you just explained, that's the success story of nearly every big subscription-based business out there, right? The reoccurring, and it does make it sticky. And what you're doing is you're empowering the educators and the parents, and then eventually the final layer being the child on the warning signs, on educating themselves to be safe on the web. So if we just kind of hone in a bit further, can you touch on your reoccurring revenue? So I guess once the school, as you said, gets stuck into your great service offering, what level do you see they go from free to paid? What level of kind of run rate are you running there? And talk us through the different packages, because obviously, as you said, you can charge a bigger premium for the most sticky all-service offering. Just want to hone in on that a bit more on the financials.
Yeah, so look, our revenue is all contracted. So $112 million of ARR, and our average contract life is about 2.5 years. You're probably interested to know that we typically apply price increases at the end of those contract lives, and, yep. and typically getting in education CPI or better is quite straightforward. We are increasingly getting better at cross sells. And so the measure in SaaS businesses is what's called net revenue retention. Mm-hmm. So after accounting for churn, are you growing the value of your existing customer base through price increases and cross sells? And our net NRR in March was 120%. So after accounting for a little bit of churn, we're churning about 3%. Now we added 23% of value on our existing customers. That's extraordinary.
That's fab. Right? That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's because we've got all these additional products. Some are paid for and some are freemium, of course. The way that we think about the freemium to premium transition is the best example of that is the safeguarding product we have, Monitor. So we rolled that out in November 21, I think it was, in the US. And we provided it free for schools as an offering called the Student Safety Audit. It was so clever. Our professional development team would go and look at a particular state and do research on the various mental health and other kind of online related challenges. So they literally do a proper body of research, and then they deliver a report to the school districts in the states and say, well, this is the stats in your state about all these sorts of challenges. Let us roll out our technology for free. We'll do it for a period of time, you know, it might be a month or 3 months, and then we'll come back to you and to your executive team and maybe the committee and present our findings. Whilst that's going, if we detect a life-threatening situation, we'll intervene and we'll protect life. But by and large, it's just going to be running behind the scenes. And, I mean, we've won every deal. Like, we literally haven't lost a customer. It's extraordinary. And because it's frightening, the stuff that these kids are doing on even school devices. So we gave the schools insights that they couldn't have dreamt of. And in education, this is true. If you're aware of something, you have a duty to act. That's kind of how the way duty of care works. And we provided them with this astonishing evidence. So, look, that's an extreme example because that technology is detecting kids that are doing really, you know, rough stuff.
That's incredible.
We're trying to do similar things with our wellbeing products. We're calling it a wellbeing audit. I don't think it's working as well, but it's a novel approach. With our online safety education, when you're in our digital classroom product, we call it ClassWise, the teacher has this tab and they can run free courses. Essentially, it's oriented around, let's call it hygiene, digital hygiene. You know, so if you've got time in homeroom, you can run a course on, you know, privacy, protecting your privacy online, or what is generative AI, or what is, how do schools filter and so on, right? So it's part of our promise to a school is the fundamentals that kids need to know to be, a good digital citizen, will provide that for free.
Wow, that's actually incredible.
Yeah, if you want to get into education around, you know, cyberbullying or, you know, being what they call bystanders in the cyberbullying world, like more advanced topics of this stuff, then there are paid-for products, paid-for modules that you can start buying. So we've now got school teachers who are now lobbying the heads of curriculum to buy our subscription packages. So, you know, so the idea is just, you know, the basic hygiene, we're going to make sure your kids are safe. That's part of our promise. But there are premium offers that we're letting teachers discover themselves, and that's helping us inform our future go-to-market.
Yeah, that's such a smart way to do it. Tim, do you have any, you know, real life examples that you can share with us that your technology really stopped a life threatening situation from occurring? It just sounds, you know, just so crazy that all of that's happening and that your technology can really stop it. It's just incredible.
It's every day. It's multiple times a day. We'll detect a child that's threatening to bring a gun to school or harm somebody or a pedophile.
Wow.
You know, hunting down a child. We see it literally every day. It's horrific. We've detected teachers having a virtual sexual relationship with students on the school device.
No way.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing that this stuff happens. We had a really bad incident recently where a child we'd been monitoring for a while, they had a number of incidents, and we, through the school, we try not to directly contact the police. Because for privacy reasons, we don't have all the context necessarily to inform the police. And in this case, we didn't, thankfully. But the police ran around this child's house, and the child came out of the house with a knife, and the police killed the child, you know, killed this 17-year-old kid. I raise that because we have 500 people in our organization are super passionate about this stuff and treat all these incidents really with a lot of care. And in particular, we have 40 human moderators based in Salford, just south of Leeds, and they deal directly with these incidents, and they're the ones that escalate it to the safeguarding functions across all of our schools. And, so the stuff that we deal with is quite harrowing.
Yeah, and that would be quite hard for some of your staff members as well. I'm sure they're obviously very properly trained in all of this and know exactly what to do, but it mustn't be that easy for them day to day. I think the only thing that would keep you really going is that you're preventing a lot and you're really helping here. It kind of sounds, you know, like the AFP kind of situation is going on at Aquaria.
I just keep picturing parents in capes is really behind the technology of what you've built. You know, parents are the superheroes at the end of the day. That's what I keep picturing. Just incredible what you've done.
That's a great image, yeah. And I think that's beyond us. I think parents are superheroes and they need to be supported. And I don't think our industry has done a great job of that.
Yeah. Well, so excited to see what happens for you guys over the next 10 years. We want to leave it just on one final question that we love to ask our guests. If you were to be an ASX listed company, what would you be and why? And you can't pick your own company. You can't be Qoria.
It'd probably be a drone manufacturer, to be honest. I think that's a that's an endless opportunity set.
Love it. So Drone Shield, we'll give you a name.
Yeah. Drone Shield. I think they've done so well. They listed at the same time as us. And I thought at the time, well, that's a curious business. And yeah, you know, they're geniuses. Well done.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, they're doing really well. But hey, you are also doing really, really well. So yeah, keep up the good work. And thank you so much for chatting with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Tim.
Wow, that was such an interesting conversation with Tim. It's so scary and harrowing what is really out there that, you know, parents and children are really facing these days. I'm so excited that we've been able to follow Qoria for all these years and definitely going to be an investor for the longer term in this one.
Yeah, like from my perspective, you know, Hayley is like, she's only two, right? So I do feel the nervousness of her being exposed to technology. So I think it's just fantastic. As he said, him and his friends, their parents, their fathers themselves, and this business was born out of the idea of solving child safety, which is more and more becoming such a big topic as we all live in technology world today. So we hope you enjoyed today's conversation. And if our conversation with Tim today did cause any triggers, please go out and seek your support network for this. Now, before we sign off, please remember, although Felicity and I are financial advisors at Shoreham Partners, please note our discussion today does not constitute as personal financial advice. If you're a teacher in the education system and this has triggered some interest for you, we empower you to take this podcast or look up the company itself to your higher powers to see if it can be embedded into your education system and everyday lives. Everything we spoke about in today's episode is based on the facts known at time of recording, being the 23rd of April, 2024.
That's right. And it was so good to see how passionate Tim is about Qoria. I really like here, we always talk about it, founder-led businesses. You know, those are the ones you need to back. So if you like this episode, give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcast or Spotify. And if you've got any questions or you want to ask us anything, email us tmtm@equitymates.com. We'll be back with more exciting content soon. Until next time.
See you then.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services License 540697.